Good evening, everyone. Thanks for tuning in to KRBD, your community radio station. For Southern Southeast Alaska, I'm Ruth Eddy, the education reporter here at the station, and I'll be hosting tonight's school board candidate forum. So there are 3 open seats for the school board, and we have 5 candidates. For the next hour or so, KRBD will host this live forum with 4 of the candidates to better get to know them. I've prepared some questions, but we invite our listeners to join the conversation. You can ask the candidates questions directly by calling 225-9655. I'd like to welcome 4 of the candidates, Conan Steele, Matt Tibbles, Misty Archbold, and Matt Eisenhower. Wanted to mention that Alma Parker wasn't able to make it tonight due to a family emergency. Thanks for coming.
Thanks for inviting us.
Thank you.
This is a larger than usual amount of candidates, so I'd like to start with each of you on why you decided to run for school board this year. Misty, I'll start with you.
Is very important, and really I just have a heart for children. So having 3 children in the school district, I like to have a hand and a say in the education that they're going to be receiving. And that's basically it. I have no preconceived agenda or other reason to be running other than community service.
Matt Eisenhower?
Sure, thank you. I think my motivation is probably similar to everybody in this room, is we want to make a difference in our community and the lives of our children, and I think we bring varied giftedness, and one of the things that I'd like to bring is obviously my organizational management background and just an understanding of how you operate large organizations and work through budgets and all the stuff that seems boring on the surface, but is very, very important. You know, I think that there's some wonderful things going on in the school district. We've got some great things I'm sure we'll talk about tonight, but there are some storm clouds on the horizon, and I think it's going to require some good leadership, some innovative leadership, some people who are willing to think outside of the box, and frankly, some people who are willing to be strong advocates where maybe we haven't had to in the past.
Matt Tibbles?
Thanks for inviting me again. The reason why I chose to run this year is I've been working with kids for almost 19 years now, and I have a passion to see them not only succeed but thrive. And that's vastly, vastly different than just doing the status quo or trying to graduate. It's seeing them excel and embrace who they are so that their future looks bright.
And Conan Steele.
Well, I'm very interested in education. I've trained as an educator in this community, went off and taught out in the bush for a couple of years. And I really believe in the power of education to transform the lives of individuals and communities. Again, we are facing some budget uncertainty here. And I think that we need to work as hard as we can to make sure that the quality of education does not suffer, because things are going to have to be cut. And in particular, coming from a teacher's perspective, what gets lost in this a lot of the time is how hard these individuals work to make this happen. You're crazy if you get into teaching for the money. And that said, there aren't very many crazy people in education. So that's why I'm in it.
Thanks. This one will start with you, Matt. What do you believe is the role of a school board member, and why do you think you're a good candidate?
Well, I think the role has to do with setting priorities and creating an environment in which our professionals can perform. I am not a micromanager. I think we hire good professionals. I believe our superintendent now, Mr. Boyle, is an excellent professional. I think we hire professionals like he and other principals to do their job. So obviously we have to look at priorities, as Conan has mentioned. That will be key. But I do think that we can set a tone. We can, again, like I said earlier, we can be advocates within our state. We can be advocates, especially within our borough, which I'm sure we'll talk a lot about tonight with the relationship between the school board and the borough. Obviously, those two bodies serve different purposes but have to work together to provide good education for our students.
For me, the role of school board member is to empower the administration and the teachers and the staff to not only help the kids achieve and thrive, but also to excel themselves, to challenge them to innovate and find new ways to reach all the kids so that they can thrive and so that they can achieve even more. I'm like Matt. I'm not a micromanager. We hire good people. You hire good people to do their job. They do their job. For me, it's always a matter of excellence. Are we doing what we can do with excellence? And if we're not, then we need to entertain the hard questions of, well, how do we fix that? But if we are, you know, our teachers, our staff, our administration, they're doing great jobs. Let's empower them to do their jobs.
I think the two main purposes of a school board member are to first of all, ensure that the money is being spent properly, make sure that the resources are being allocated in the most efficient way that benefits the most students. And second, I think it's very, very important school board members provide community perspective.
I tend to agree with Conan, pretty much spot on with that. I believe that the role of the school board member is to really advocate for, you know, the top-notch education in our town, and I think our school board does a great job of that. I think we do that through the role of the school board for me. I mean, just knowing the policy is the board is fundamentally responsible for the direction that education goes in our town. I believe that the only employee that the school board has is the superintendent, and that the school board must be responsible for making sure that the avenues that he's going down are solid, that they're backed up with factual information, and it's important for school board members to be the people who ask those questions. I believe I would make a good school board member because I'm not afraid to ask those questions. I'm not afraid to dig into why we need to go certain directions and to get as much information as I need to know to feel comfortable supporting things, because I'm really here as a representative of our larger community.
We'll start with Matt Tibbles on this one. Over the last year, what have you seen as the school board's biggest success and biggest failure?
I think the biggest success is looking at the hard choices they had to earlier this year about the finances. And working through all of that to the point that nobody got cut, that our teachers, our staff, everybody is still here when other school districts, not only in Alaska but across the United States, are having to cut people. The school board, the administrative staff, Superintendent Boyle, all of them worked really hard to make sure that our staff is still here and serving and passionately serving our kids and helping them. What was the second question?
And of failure.
Failure. For me, a failure for our school district is looking at the safety of our kids. Given that my job, I'm the education services manager at WISH, you know, we deal with domestic violence, sexual assault day in and day out. And I look at the safety of our kids. So in order for a kid to learn, to effectively engage in the learning process, the kid has to feel safe. And there's a lot of kids out there that don't feel safe. And some of that, and a lot of that may be that it's coming from home or coming from friends or something where they're being bullied or have a rough situation at home. But the school teachers, the school administration, all of them can work together to create a safe environment so that when they know they're at school, they can take a deep breath and they know that they're cared for. There's people that love them and have a passion for them to see them achieve and thrive and then engage their brain. The science says that if a kid doesn't feel safe, there's no way biologically that they can learn. And so I think that's one of the reasons, one of the places where our school district can improve.
Conan.
So I think that the fact that we came through and we weathered budget storm round one this year, it's going to be coming again next year, and came out of it looking pretty well. I think that was probably our biggest success this year. As far as a failure goes, failure is kind of a harsh word, and I would be reluctant to assign any kind of failure to the board this year.
Misty?
I'm going to go with, for the success and failure, I'm going to kind of put that all into one basket, and I'm going to go with the budget process. It's great that the school board was able to get through the budget process and retain all staff. It is bothersome to me that every year, year after year, we've got staff, teachers, really in a state of flux for several weeks before the budget's complete. I think that's unnecessary. I mean, I know it's a public process. We got to get through it, but and I'm not even sure how to fix that. And I don't know that I'd call it a failure, but it's really a learning experience. I think it's something that we definitely need to get a little more, I don't know, we need to get it under wraps. And I just can't even imagine the emotional turmoil these people go through. It's not an easy process. I don't know what the fix is, but I'm certain there is a solution, and great minds come together, we'll find it.
Matt Eisenhower.
Sure. I think a lot of good things have happened. Obviously, the budgetary process was a challenging one, and I think I'll give some reasons why I think it was successful, as we've talked about, as far as being able to keep the services that we were able to keep. I think it's mainly because the board members had civil discourse, and I think there was a lot of interdependency in the sense that in areas of deficiency of one member, they relied on the wisdom of others, and I think that's a sign of a good board. And I know that Mr. Tibbles and I have actually talked about the increasing civil discourse in our community. I think that's a sign of a good community, is when we can honestly disagree on issues but still come to some conclusions, because I recognize that I will be wrong on issues, and I need to know from others different perspectives. So a different perspective does not make me defensive. And I think that's what we saw on the board, was some good civil discourse that led to some very good decisions. I think I agree with Misty as far as the failure, and again, with I agree with Conan. I think failure might be a little bit of a hard word, but I recognize the point of the question. I think one of the challenges that I saw is not necessarily because or the board's fault. Obviously, it falls on the responsibility, the timing of the budget, which puts a lot of employees in angst. And I think that there could be greater work, especially, again, with the borough. I think the borough assembly holds as much responsibility in the timing of these issues than anybody else. So those two pieces together obviously were a failure to our students and our employees, because at the end of the day, good organizations need good people. And when we fail to give them the information they need in a timely manner, like that budgetary process, I think we all fail as a group together.
Thanks. If you're just joining us tonight, we're hosting the four of the five school board candidates. It's a live show, and we offer the opportunity for you to ask questions directly of the candidates. The phone number to call, if you'd like to do that, is 225-9655. I'll go ahead with some questions I have for Baird. Conan, we'll start with you on this one. Both the state and Ketchikan Gateway Borough are preparing their arguments for the Alaska Supreme Court later this month. Do you believe that the state's required local contribution is unconstitutional? Some thoughtfulness.
Yes. Well, they wouldn't be arguing this whole thing if the constitutionality of it wasn't in question. And I guess it's going to be for the court to decide ultimately whether it's constitutional or not. Now, I do think that regardless, you know, depending on which way it goes, it's going to have some implications. I think that there are a lot of boroughs and districts around the state that are just waiting and watching and looking to see what's going to happen with this thing. And but as far as the constitutionality of it, you know, both sides make good arguments, and it's going to be up to the judge to decide.
Misty?
That is a great question. And I agree with Conan. I think that's to be decided at a higher level. What I do think is that this has really opened a huge can of worms. There are going to be ramifications behind this. I mean, and there already have been for the borough for a long time, and I understand that. The bottom line for me, whether it's constitutional or unconstitutional, is education is important, and we have to fund that. It doesn't come down to dollars and cents for me. Investing in an education for our children is an investment in our future. I don't know that it's unconstitutional. I have read Mr. Bockhorst's report, and it's very convincing. I've not followed it at the state level probably as much as I should have, but he has a very convincing argument.
Matt Eisenhower?
Well, I agree. It's a fascinating question. I love law, and I love to follow law, and I've talked to dozens of much smarter people than I am about this, and I think, as we've already stated, it wouldn't be in the Supreme Court if it wasn't a controversial piece of legislation, or at least challenging the legislation. I do think that the bottom line, though, is that the ramifications of a ruling will be huge, and I think our constituents and our community need to understand. Our representative Dan Ortiz, I think, stated it very clearly recently, earlier this week. He said, you know, the educational pie of dollars does not change in our state. The educational pie, the amount of funds that we have to go toward education will not change. It's just how is that divvied up? I think the fear is that if it is deemed unconstitutional, the way these funds are dispersed, that will likely have a negative impact on our community. I don't think anyone would disagree on that. So we should probably be prepared from a school district standpoint to receive that ruling. From a taxpayer standpoint in the borough, it may be good from the contribution from the borough, but those dollars are still need to come from somewhere. Obviously, 75% of our budget comes from the state anyway, so if that's impacted, those funds will have to come from somewhere, or there'll be some dramatic deep cuts in a fairly lean district already.
Matt Tibbles.
I would echo what everybody else has said for the most part. It's an extremely delicate issue, and none of us are judges really to figure that one out. That's why they get paid the big bucks, and not me. And like Conan and like Misty and Matt had said, you know, both sides have very valid arguments in how they represent their sides of view. The important part for me is whatever the decision may be is for our community to rally around our kids and to step up and to support them and say, whatever it is, let's continue to keep our kids in focus. Let's continue to support them and give them the best possible future now so that they are prepared when they do graduate to go on to whatever they go on to.
Thank you all. And we'll start this question with you, Misty. The borough and the school board have worked recently, especially to improve their relationship. If elected, what would you do to help maintain a working relationship between those two bodies?
Well, I will show up, be level-headed and logical and respectful of each person on each body, respecting the opinions of others and really trying to see things from the perspective. And this has been this whole relationship issue and trying to work well together. This isn't something new. It's been going on for several years. We're looking at it quite a dramatic shift in the makeup of the school board this year. So who knows? Maybe this year's the year. And I really, when it comes down to it, all you can do is collaborate. You have to collaborate with people. You have to be willing to give and take and to just, you really have to be willing to work together. You're not going to go in and get everything you want. They're not going to come in and get everything they want. And that's kind of been, I think, the premise behind this break in the relationship between the two bodies for the last several years. And quite frankly, everyone just needs to get over it and start working together.
Matt Eisenhower?
Well, this is a topic of great importance to me, and I think to be honest and frank with our constituents and the people in the borough, there's always going to be a natural tension between these two bodies because one body is responsible for the fiduciary health of our borough, and then the other, the school board, is responsible for being an advocate for a specific area in our community, which is education. So there's always going to be that natural tension. I think that the job that I see on the school board is to ask some better questions, maybe stronger questions, to better understand some things surrounding, for instance, the secure rural school funds and how that, you know, the annexation of a few years should have resulted in more funds, but in the end, the school district did not see a net gain from that. So those are some questions I think we should be asking and looking at. I think also as it relates to the borough contracted services, you know, the fact that we're paying the borough $800,000 a year for services that in almost every other community in the country is just assumed. If you use a playground in a community, you shouldn't have to pay for it. So those are things that, you know, without necessarily diving into the details, at least on the surface, I look at and go, there's some dialogue that I think can happen there. I think specifically, timing and the styles and the place in which the borough and the school board meet, I think, need to be looked at. The timing doesn't make sense to me to have a joint meeting in January, for instance, after the borough has already made their decision on funding levels. So there's some practical things I think the board can do to help in that. I also think that the last and probably the most important is engaging community members and helping them understand this process so that they can speak to their borough representatives and have them engaged to fully understand. But the bottom line is that at any negotiating table, you can't go in too weak, you can't go in too strong. There's got to be a sense of balance, and that's an area of strength that I could definitely bring. I bring a lot of advocacy across the United States and the places that I speak, and in Juneau when I come together and bring people to a table and have a conversation with civility, but trying to reach some conclusions with the borough in mind.
Matt Tibbles.
First and foremost is, having worked with kids for 19 years, is I've always been a bridge builder. Whenever there's been opposing sides or conflict in a situation with dealing with kids, I've always tried to bring people together so that we can sit down at a table. And similar to what Matt was saying, that if we can sit down and have a dialogue, not a debate, but if we can sit down and honestly have a dialogue where we respect each other, where we honor where the other person is coming from and their point of view and truly listen to them, then I think we have the potential for a cooperative solution, a collaborative solution, as opposed to coming in and trying to force my opinion or force the borough to give up the charging us, the school district, for the $700,000, $800,000 to use of the recreational facilities. You know, if we come in with the ultimatum, you know, you need to do this or we're going to, you know, not use it, that doesn't go anywhere. And vice versa, if they come in and don't listen, that doesn't go anywhere for us. But if we're truly moving past our personality differences and willing to have a little give and take and willing to have that dialogue where we truly respect others, and again, going back to what I said earlier, we have the kids in mind first. They're the priority. not my opinion, not the borough's opinion. It's the matter of the kids, so that they succeed, so that they thrive. If we can come together like that, then the world can change. Ketchikan can change. Our relationship can strengthen and transform into something that is truly sets the standard for across the state of Alaska. So that's what I believe.
And Conan.
So, well, first of all, I think that I'm right. But that said, I do strongly believe in compromise and consensus. And I think that just because the two bodies have opposing viewpoints on certain things, it doesn't necessarily mean that the relationship has to be adversarial. So I try to approach these things recognizing that, like, yes, I have my own strong viewpoint, and yes, I really believe in it, and I'm going to defend that dog going into the fight. But this other person has equally strong, an equally strong opinion, and it's usually valid, and you have to learn to just get along and compromise with people. So just remembering that you're all fighting for the same thing, you're not necessarily going about it the same way, but you have to remember that you really are all fighting for the same thing. You are all fighting for the greater good, even if you don't agree with each other and things get a little bloody and brutal from time to time.
And this is a call-in show. If you'd like to call in, you can call 225-9655. Spencer called in. Are you there, Spencer?
I am here.
Go ahead with your question.
Well, my question is, with the new marijuana regulations out, I wonder what kind of problems the candidates see for the school board coming into the future. So, for an example, housing students and sports activities, how do you see that affecting the marijuana regulations affecting that part of the school? And what other problems have you thought about that could be stumbling blocks going forward from here? And in particular, like, I'll give you another example. If a home has legal marijuana growing in it, do we house kids and waive sports and those kind of things? Or how do we find out, or do we ask that question? Or those thoughts and stuff is what I'm looking for tonight.
Thanks for calling, Spencer. Matt Eisenhower, we'll start with you on this one.
Sure. I think I saw Conan's hand go up.
You want to go
up,
first?
I'll respond.
Go ahead.
Well, obviously, the use right now is legal. I think the big question in our town is whether or not we'll see commercialization or commercial sales, retail sales. This will be illegal. It will remain illegal for students who are part of our school district. I think that's been very, very clear. I think the district and Mr. Boyle have made that abundantly clear. I was glad to see that we're retaining our drug dog, at least the last I heard, to make sure that the dog is available for on the school. Although I will say, Spencer, that you've raised an interesting question about sports and housing, and I think those are things that will have to be worked through. I suspect folks who have plants would just have to claim that, and we'd have to work through a safe policy. Just off the cuff, thinking about it with the last 10 seconds that you've given me to think about it, I don't necessarily see danger in someone growing a plant and having a child in there, but I probably would land on the point of safety and say that may not be the best place to house that student. But thank you for the question, Spencer. Those are good things to think about.
Sorry, I didn't see your hand, Conan.
I'd say that we approach it about the same way that you approach alcohol. When we have these big tournaments in the community, you need to put kids places. And that's not to say that you put them wherever you can. A lot of these houses that end up hosting kids are, they're houses where alcohol is consumed and stored. But there's a difference between, using alcohol and consuming it and storing it and being responsible with it, and leaving it around on the coffee table for the kids to have at. Same thing with the marijuana. And so I think that if there's somebody that's got a problem violating the law or, creating an unsafe situation for kids, yeah, we need to know about that. We take that on a case-by-case basis. But I just don't see how it would be, under the law, how it would be a whole lot different than how you would approach a household where people consume alcohol.
Misty, you go ahead.
Yeah, thanks for calling in, Spencer. It's a great question. It's legal now, and I would tend to go on the side that Conan has brought up here. It's just like alcohol, marijuana is legal now. I don't picture any time in the near future where school districts are going to be regulating households that are housing their children, although it's a great question to ask, and it's important to a lot of people. And I know, you know, with our school district, we've had agreements with out-of-town hosts that, you know, they were in good faith trusting that they're not going to be over-consuming, indulging in alcohol while they're housing our children. And I would expect the same for our community as we house children from out of town. It is a good question. I don't particularly feel that it's, I don't know, going to be as big of an issue as some people might construe it to be, but it's something to think about.
Conan, do you want to add something?
And one thing I would like to add to that, Spencer, is, you know, we would, I think as a board, we should look at some sort of policy that states that if you're going to be, you know, you sign a contract that says if you're going to be housing kids for a tournament, that you just don't consume in the house while they're there.
Lastly, Matt Tibbles.
Yeah, and that's, Spencer, thank you for that. Like everybody has said, that is a great question. One of the things that I do think about is I like what Conan said there at the end, is that as a board we look at, we ask people not to. I have two kids in the school district, and as one gets old enough to begin to travel here in a couple of years, I think about what that means to my oldest daughter going off to live at someone's house. You know, I would expect them to keep my daughter safe. I would expect them to be a great host or hostess to my daughter and treat her with respect, treat my family with respect. So I would support a policy that just says, you know, while we have students traveling and our people are housing other teams, you know, just refrain from using it right now. And then, you know, it only lasts a day or 2 days or 3 days. And then after that, you know, it's your house.
Thanks for answering and thanks for calling. Again, this is a call-in show. So if you do have questions for four of the five school board candidates, you can call 225-9655. We'll continue where we left off. We were talking about the relationship between the borough and the school board. Do you believe that the school district is adequately funded by the borough? Does anyone want to start this one?
Yeah, I can. Well, I'll jump in. I think my definition of that would be we are at a minimum funding level right now. I mean, and we were able to give some of the foundational basics that a school district would expect to give. But I think we would be communicating something very improperly to say that there is a lot of margins. I think if most people were able to look at the budget and see where the red line came down this past year, there were a lot of things below that red line that I think the average person, if they took some time and looked at it and had the ability to see it, would probably think those are not wasteful things. They're very important things. As a matter of fact, simple supplies for teachers were below the red line. Now, if we want to be a community that asks our teachers to teach without supplies, and we say we feel like that is somehow excessive funding, that's a problem. I mean, I don't want to get to a point of us trying to think about outsourcing our buses to horse and buggy organizations because we can't afford fuel. There are certain things that we need to do. So my answer to that is we've got minimum funding at this point.
Thank you, Matt. Conan?
I would say it's adequate, but not optimal.
Matt Tibbles?
I would say we're right on that line, honestly. You know, I went to my youngest daughter's. She starts kindergarten this year in Ms. Varela's class at Houtling. And we went to the parent-teacher, meet the teacher night, and part of our school list of supplies that we had to bring was paper towels. Because of the cuts, the maintenance department has said, you know what, paper towels in the classrooms aren't a priority. So that passes on to the students and ultimately to the parents that says, you know what, if you want your kids to wash your hands during school, you got to provide the paper towels. So I would say we're right at that line of we might be not adequately funded. We're just right there where it could go either way. You know, you take a look at that red line. You know, teachers' jobs were on that red line last year. Counselors were below the line for a while, and that speaks measures to our funding and to our priority that we're willing to cut counselors. And thankfully, the board worked through all of that and along with Superintendent Boyle to make it happen where the counselors were still here. But when we have to make those decisions about cutting school counselors where, you know, they help the safety environment, they help the learning environment of our schools, we're right there. We're right on the line, and it could go either way.
Misty.
My answer is yes and no. And I'll explain a little bit. You know, I think the borough does what they believe they can do, and I know we appreciate it. On the flip side, I think that there's more that the school district can do in regard to funding. I do believe that parents of students heavily, heavily contribute to supplying these schools with items. I know having three children in the school district, we put a pretty penny down every year on a ton of supplies. We have to help the girls bring the stuff up first day of school every year. And meanwhile, and I'm going to get the proverbial eye roll from a lot of people out there for saying this, but I do not understand why in a district that has budgetary concerns like we do, why do we need to give the Cadillac laptops out to each and every child? I would like to know how can we allocate some of that money and resource it into other avenues. They're very expensive. I think that we as a district need to be looking at which teachers are really utilizing those pieces of equipment that have programs that aren't available on other systems. I want to know if this is a good purchase for our district to be making, because it is very, very, very expensive. We offer fantastic programs in our school district, and I think that's great, but I think there are just other avenues that we need to look at, and I think we can be saving money and putting that towards other areas that are chronically below the red line every year.
Matt Tibbles, you wanted to respond?
I just want to add, too, honestly, that one of the great things, I was down in Washington seeing some friends a couple weeks ago, and one of my family's friends is a school teacher in the Auburn School District, and she works at the, if you want to label it, the lowest income elementary school in the district. And one of the ways that they have overcome their budget problems is they are actively and aggressively seeking for grants. Just in the last couple of years, they've raised over $2 million in grants. So that when those kids come to school on the first day of school, they have a school store. And so every kid in that elementary goes to the school store and they get two pairs of shoes. And for some, that's the only pairs of shoes that they will get throughout the whole year. And so they have aggressively gone and sought for grants and for other funds outside of the school district. And that's something that, as I was talking to, again, going back to Ms. Varela's Meet the Teacher Night, you know, she looked at the playground. The little kids' playground outside their window at Halloween, and she goes, "You know what? It would be great to have a cover." Yeah, it would be great to have a cover, and I love that idea because I've got text messages both the last 2 days. Hey, change the kids' clothes in the bags because they're all soaked. And so there's a time to be innovative in how we look at our funding and where we go so that we can adequately fund what we need and what is necessary.
And Matt, you wanted a quick response?
Sure. I was just going to add that this is about fiscal responsibility, and I personally am a very conservative person when it comes to finances. But I also understand as a business person the need for investment. You have to spend money and view it as an investment in our children, in our future. So I would say I think with any organization, I imagine, and I have looked through the budget and talked with various people, there probably are some ways that we can make some adjustments. I know my background in healthcare. I'd like to look at our healthcare plan and make sure that we're getting the best value for our teachers, proponent for good healthcare for our teachers. But typically when people look at healthcare costs, because they are a large cost within our district, that is an area that we can continue to improve upon. So my broader point is I think there are places for savings. But I also want to make sure when we answer this question that people in our community understand that we do not have a over-the-top funded district by any measure from a state standpoint or even from a national standpoint.
Thank you. Kona, would you like to add something real quickly?
And I was just going to say that we are the only district of comparable size in the state that is not funded to the cap by their borough.
This is a call-in show, and we have a question from Spencer. Are you there, Spencer? I guess he hung up. Maybe we'll get him to call back. Anyone can call with your questions to any of the four school board candidates. The number is 225-9655. Otherwise, we'll continue. We're talking a little bit about budgets. And just to get into maybe some more specific things, this year the board members were faced with some tough decisions like we've talked about, and some of the programs and positions at risk included the music program, counselor, activities funds, maintenance supplies, and preschool. That's just some of them, but I'm curious if you were a board member this budget season, how you would have prioritized those things or what you would have made a priority. Matt Dibbles, you want to start with this one?
Sure, I'd be glad to. I think first and foremost is the question of what lens are we using to cut and to look at our budget strategically and judge that. Are we just slashing? There's some in the legislature here in Alaska that, just want to slash to get the point across that, things aren't going well for our state right now, and people need to wake up. I wouldn't go that far. I look at our lens, and for me, the priorities on a lens would be student safety and student learning and thriving. And working around those priorities. As I mentioned before, last year's budget was the counselors were on the chopping block. And I'm thankful for the school board that they didn't cut the counselors because in primary prevention, counselors play a vital role in helping before bullying, before disrespecting other people happen. Counselors play a vital role in creating that safe environment so the kids can be safe. As having my youngest daughter attend the preschool the last couple of years, preschool is very important. My daughter, at the end of last year, I remember sitting down for the parent-teacher final review and thanking the staff there, because I got to see my daughter transform, for 2 years, going from a shy, on an IEP program for her speech, and then moving into, she doesn't stop talking now, and pronounces her words, and she feels safe around her teachers that she's blossomed. Into this beautiful young kindergartner now that loves school, loves learning. Mom and dad have a little hard time letting go because she's our last one at that age. But we we see that as important. So when we look at counselors, we look at preschool. Those are vitally important at the young age to help our kids succeed and build protective factors into their lives so that when they do get to middle school and high school, they're strong. Their self-esteem is not only building, but it's strong enough that they can work through eventually bad choices that some of them will make. It's just life.
And Conan, thoughts on budget priorities?
So some folks are for, you know, everybody sharing the hurt. You cut a little bit from this, you cut a little bit from that. And as a district, that's not the approach we take. We take the program-based budgeting approach. And, you know, the strong point about that is, you know, you make sure that all of your programs, are, you know, the programs that are remaining are strong. You're not hobbling any of your programs. Now, the dark side of that is, you know, you've got six equally valuable programs, and it's like standing six nice people against the wall and saying, hey, I really like all of you, but one of you's got to die. So as far as prioritizing these things, I don't know what you prioritize. And a lot of people would say that, like, you know, well, obviously the activities, you know, that's always an easy target. But I'm reluctant to say activities because I really believe that there's a lot of non-academic learning that takes place in things like sports. And some of these activities are academically related, like ACDC. So as far as, you know, what do we prioritize, all of it. I don't think there's really anything on that budget that's not worth having there. Now, whether we could afford it all from year to year is another story, but that's, like, really, really tough. And, like, you know, what would I prioritize, you know, when this process starts over again in a few months? That's a tough question. I'd have to see what's happening in a few months. I'd have to see what the reality is.
Misty.
I'm going to start by saying that everything on the list is a priority for the school board, for the school district. Nobody likes to see anything below the red line. For me personally, hands down, and I'm going to pick two, my priorities on that list would be maintenance and preschool. We got to have warm, safe places for our kids to get educated in. And children 3-4 years old, they're like sponges. This is the prime opportunity to get them prepared for K-12 education, which we are mandated to provide. Preschool is supplemental. It's just supplemental program that we do in our district, but I think it's one of the most important programs that we have going on in our district. You know, and it's all important. Activities are important. Supplies are important. For me personally, though, and that's kind of the beauty of the board, I've got preschool maintenance, got activities, ACDC, and, you know, that's just another time to come together and collaborate. And thankfully, we were able to, continue programs, which is important, and I know that they've taken big cuts over the years. But for me, definitely maintenance and preschool.
Matt Tibbles, you wanted to respond?
I actually just want to add to it. You know, one of the great things is there's a national conversation about universal preschool going on right now in the nation. And so hopefully that'll play itself out, that if it does pass, then we have federal funding that will help with the universal preschool. So I'm like Misty, you know, preschool is extremely important, very formative, but hopefully that won't be a conversation that we have to have anymore if Congress will be able to pass universal preschool.
And I'm just going to go ahead and finish with Matt Eisenhower, your budget priorities.
Yeah, I think that, frankly, that gets an unfair question at this stage in the game because there's so many things that will happen between now and when we decide on the budget. It's impossible to say tonight. I joke with my three boys the other night. I said that's almost like someone coming into my house and saying, if one of my three boys has to be, you know, taken away, which one am I going to give away? That's just a question I'm not willing to answer. I will say this, that the way we make decisions for me is always about the core of the teacher and the student. for thousands of years. That's the foundation of education, is a person with knowledge being able to convey that information to others. Now, we live in a complicated society that requires lots of other things. I get that. But at the end of the day, the environments with computers and other technology are important. They lend themselves to creating an atmosphere in which teachers will be successful. But at the end of the day, it's about retaining and recruiting the best and the brightest teachers in the classroom. I'll add one other thing that I think that I'd like to ask directly to the borough is that they would commit to the school district, because I think, as Matt Tibbles pointed out earlier, grants are a great solution. That's a big world that I live in with managing large multi-million dollar grants. But we will not be incentivized as a school district to seek grants if the money is simply backed out of the funding by the borough, which it currently does now. When we get grants in the tune of $400,000, and the borough simply just doesn't fund us that $400,000. So that does not incent us to go out and look at supplemental funding for these types of things. So I would commit to the voters that if I'm elected, all those pieces that are below the red line, we will do our best to find funding, and I think it can be done through grants and other creative solutions. So I just reject the premise, at least the red line budget that we have now, that there's anything below that red line that cannot be realized next year.
Conan, did you want to add something?
I just wanted to add, what they were discussing about the universal preschool. That would be a great development, because it is a conversation from time to time when money gets tight. And the board did approve over the summer Tonga School of Arts and Sciences adding another half-day preschool class. So, I mean, it is important to us. But the point is made, it does come up from time to time. It is outside of our mandate. And if it was made part of our mandate and there was funding that came along with it, it would be great if we could just stop having that conversation about whether we're going to do it as a district or whether it's going to be under threat. Because I can remember one board member several years ago, when they first started the preschool thing, dissented, and his main point of dissent was like, well, we don't know if we're going to be able to pay for this thing next year, and we don't want a bunch of pissed off constituents because, like, you know, hey, what happened to our preschool?
Some of the programs this year that didn't get funded by the district were those directed towards Native studies. Like we talked about grants, a lot of those programs were funded by grants. In the end, how do you think the district could better reach the Native population or other minority groups? Misty, you want to start?
I do. Thank you. I think that's a great question. First of all, the district needs to maintain the relationship building with the local tribes. I did sit on the Indian Policy and Procedures Committee during my term, my prior term that ended last October, and it was good. I thought we made very good headway building relationships and working together. I did notice that fell way by the wayside this year. I don't believe the committee's meeting. I am a committee member, and I've not been to a meeting. I think building those relationships are just so important. If you cease communication, you cease opportunities to invite those opportunities into the school district where our students can learn about local Native heritage. It's a little disturbing to me that there are no Native studies class at the high school this year. The Johnson O'Malley program, that was a great program that went on in our district for years and years and years. And it's just one of those things that a child growing up can see the cultural life that went on around them for years and years, and it sticks with them. And it's important in our community. It's a large segment of our community, and really, it's just going to boil down to continuing that relationship. I'm not sure why it seems to fall apart. It does. But I think we can turn it around. You just need to have the folks willing to do it.
Well, Matt Eisenhower?
Sure. I mean, my short answer is that Misty is part of that solution, and I don't say that flippantly. I think it gets back to the conversation I had earlier about the interdependency of a good, balanced board, and having somebody like Misty and her background and her passion that I can learn from, and then take some of the skills and passions that I have with advocacy and bridge building. And I think that's where a healthy board can work together, because I am not an expert in that community, and nor will I likely ever be. but I can come alongside and learn. And I know that my friends in the Native community have expressed a lot of concerns with exactly that. Now, I don't intimately understand and know all of these things, but it's enough of an alarm bell for me to know that it is something that needs to be addressed. At multiple levels, not only the Native communities, but also some of the other ethnic groups in our borough.
Matt Tibbles.
I would think there's a lot of work that needs to be done there. Part of one of the responsibilities in the job that I have right now is we do a compass program that helps. Young men mentor teenage, early elementary age kids. And we've partnered with the community of Saxman to do that. And one of the things that I have value and cherish from interacting with the men and the boys from the Saxman community is the humility to come to them and say, I need to learn from you. I can learn from you. Teach me. And I think that's a position that we need to adopt, one of humility that comes to the Native Alaskan community, the Filipino community, the Hispanic community, and says, you know what? We need you because we're not whole without you. We're not complete without you. So if we sit down and with humility learn and say, teach us so that we can better listen to your students, so that we can better help the Native communities and the Filipino and the Hispanic communities to educate their kids, then I think that's a huge priority there. I'm like Missy. Why don't we have a Tlingit or a Haida or a Shamal Yak language class as a language for our students to learn. You know, one of the things that's happening across the United States is a lot of the Native communities are trying to revive their languages because their fluent speakers are dying. And what a better way to come together as a community here in Ketchikan and the Southeast that says, you know what, we want to help with that, and we want to spur that on and take that to the next level, that not only our Native population speaks the language, but our non-Native population speaks the language too. So there's a lot of work that needs to be done. There's a lot of bridge building that needs to be done, given that I do interact with our Native community a lot. You know, I hear over and over and over how they don't feel that they're listened to. And so we need to step back, even if you don't agree with that statement, we need to step back with humility and say, you know what, there may be some truth here that I am missing. And so let's listen, let's learn, let's grow together.
And Conan.
So I spent 2 years teaching out in the Aleut community of St. Paul. It's in the Pribilof Islands, about 250 miles from any other land in the middle of the Bering Sea. And they're over 90% Aleut out there. As a matter of fact, in the secondary wing of the school, the 2 years I was out there, I didn't have one kid that wasn't at least part Aleut. That said, the language revitalization piece is big out there. The senior center, there are probably about half a dozen people that are still speaking the language, and they're passing on, you know, one at a time. And so there's this great program that they brought out there called Where Are Your Keys? I'm not sure if you've heard of it, but it integrates international sign language with indigenous languages. And this guy that I forget what his name is, but this guy that, you know, that does this, he goes around to all these Native communities around the country, and he sets up this program. And it doesn't just work with one language, it works with lots of languages. That would be something that I think would be great to see around here, because I still remember, and I do it with the hand, Alkuta Waya, what's this? I could still remember to ask, what's this in Aleut? I'm not sure if I pronounced it correctly. But, and the other thing is bringing them in. Again, we're not as... The Natives don't make up as large of a proportion of our student population here as they did for me out there, but bringing them into the community. They had Grandparents Day that, you know, or, you know, they call them their kookas. You know, they bring them in, they do stuff. Promoting those traditional but maybe non-Western modes of learning and teaching. And the language revitalization part in particular is that's something that, you know, studies have shown that when you think differently in one language than you do in another. And so language is a huge part of, you know, a culture's identity.
Matt Tibbles, you wanted to add something?
Yeah, I do. You know, and there is some good things that are going on. You know, when Harvey Shills brings the Sonyaquan dancers, the Cape Fox dancers, onto this to the schools so that the kids get to experience native dancing and experience and be surrounded by that culture. It's a beautiful thing. So the more that we can come together and provide those opportunities to enrich everybody here in the Southeast, the better we're going to be in the long run, because it's not going to be, hopefully one day down the road, we don't have to worry about this conversation of you know, how come the native studies aren't here. We're saying, you know what, Ketchikan led the way and showed the United States, showed the world that we can all come together, we can all learn from each other, we can all thrive together.
Moving on to a different topic. After a student survey or safety report recently, the Ketchikan High School is looking to install surveillance cameras. I'm wondering if you're in support of that. Go ahead, you want to start?
Anything that improves student safety and monitoring and accountability, I'm all for.
Misty?
I agree. I don't see any problem installing surveillance cameras. You know, kids got their smartphones out pretty much 24/7 and they're videotaping themselves. So, you know, I think it's part of the culture today. And if children in our district aren't feeling safe, and that's, I do think that's a necessary precaution that we need to take.
Matt Eisenhower?
I'm for it.
And Matt Tibbles.
I agree. I hate that we've come to that point in our culture and society, but I do agree that if it does support the safety and the learning environment in our school system, then we need to do that. Hopefully we won't get down to the point where we have metal detectors and all that kind of stuff.
Conan, you wanted to add something?
And the best part about it is we nicely asked the borough to provide the $40,000, and they did.
All right, another topic. The Ketchikan student population has been growing, resulting in some large classrooms. How do you believe the district should respond to that? Matt Eisenhower, you want to start?
Hire more teachers. That's a simple answer. I don't think there's any other solution. I think there is some debate as to whether class sizes impact outcomes, but I think there's probably no debate, especially in the younger grades, and that's where we're seeing the bust in the enrollment, that additional teachers are needed. And I would be a proponent for more teachers. I don't necessarily like the idea of large classrooms with paraprofessionals. I think paraprofessionals serve a great purpose, and they're wonderful, a piece of the team. But at the end of the day, we need new teachers. I would add, too, that there is some data coming out of Korea and Japan that suggests that classroom sizes don't impact outcomes. But if you dig deeper and you look at that data, you see that the cultural differences between Korean children and Japanese children and American children are very, very different. We do not live in a culture of independence. Most of our children need, whether we like it or not, a lot of hand-holding and education. We're not going to swim against the tidal wave and beat that. So the bottom line is that our children deserve teachers, and if we've got higher enrollment, we need to hire more.
Matt Tibbles?
I think of one of my friends. His name is Derek Peterson, and he travels all over the world talking about helping youth develop anchors. He calls them anchors in the kids' lives. And his research has shown having 300,000 youth in his data body that kids need a minimum of five anchors in their lives to be able to navigate good decisions, bad decisions, and be able to bounce back from the bad decisions. And so when we're having classrooms of large students, the third grade classroom, which has my daughter in it, is one of the largest classrooms or classes in the school district. And I would add a caveat to what Matt said is I think we need more teachers, yes. I think we need excellent teachers in our classroom. But also I think the community needs to come together and support. I'm all for businesses embracing a model that says, you know what, let's invest in our kids. Let's invest in the future of Ketchikan now so that maybe some of their employees once a month can go to and volunteer in the classrooms. Listening to the parent get to know the teacher night for Ms. Smith at Houtling, her third grade class, she said in our conversation to all the parents, she said, she goes, I'm trying to go and find out what all parents they do for their profession so that I can get them in the classroom and to help with the reading groups, to help that. And so I'm all for our community coming together and say, you know what, this is extremely important for the lives of our youth so that we do provide some extra manpower so that maybe I go into Ms. Smith's classroom to support my daughter and help in the reading groups from 9 to 9:30 and then 9:30 to 10, and that allows Ms. Smith to go concentrate her efforts on maybe some kids that need a little more work. So there's not, I don't know if there's just one answer to the question of large classrooms. So that's where I would land.
Conan.
So I could tell you from the perspective of somebody that's taught, when I student taught in this district a few years ago, I was teaching in classes that most of the classes were in the high 20s going on 30. And, that's, you know, I mean, it wasn't a bad situation, but it's a less than optimal situation. And, you know, I feel good about what I was able to accomplish. But and then I went out to St. Paul, where the entire 2 years out there, my largest class was 12 kids. Now, that's probably unrealistic for a district this size. But I don't see why we can't get it down into that 18 to 20 range. Because, you know, it's harder on the teacher. Now, you do acquire, you know, you do achieve some economy of scale. Like, you know, you have to do the same planning for 5 that you do for 20. But there's also the personal aspect. I mean, you were talking about people needing anchors, Matt. And, well, I could tell you that you develop much more of a personal relationship with your students. You have more time for your individual students when you have fewer of them. So that's coming from the teacher's perspective. Now, coming from the perspective of the guy who's got to stare at the line item budget and decide, like, you know, what's going to get hacked, you know, that's really tough because I do see both sides of it. But I think that we do need to do everything that we can to keep those class sizes small because these teachers do work really hard. They've given their lives to this. And, again, they're not in this for the money, or if they are, they're crazy. And so, you know, just to keep the quality of education, you know, there's a time to save a buck, and then there's a time to say, okay, we need to spend a couple of extra dollars and maybe even go in the hole a little bit to do the right thing here. Unfortunately, we really can't do that.
Misty.
Well, increased population and students is going to bring an increase in the budget. We need to follow suit and provide good teachers to teach those kids. I just plugging them in, making the class sizes bigger, that's not always going to work. And it will for some teachers. You know, you can have a teacher with 30 kids in our class, and they're great. It's really highly dependent on the makeup of your classroom. You can have a class with 12 kids, and if you have, you know, you can have a really hard time with that. That's all I'm going to say. I think if we're getting the increased funds for those students, we do need to provide the teachers. I think the teachers that we employ are one of our greatest assets.
Matt Tibbles, you wanted to add something?
I do, and I just want to add personal experience here. From my wife, when we lived down in Washington, my wife is a nationally board certified high school and junior high math teacher. And her last few years at Puyallup High School, she was having 130, 150 kids in her classroom, you know, from one class to the next, you know, the smallest class, you know, being 30, 35 kids. And part of it, for her was she's a very personal teacher. She roots for the underdog. And one of the great stories I tell about my wife is she, first day of school, her last year down in Washington, she had a kid that was a senior, that was taking algebra or algebra two, something like that, and needed it to graduate. And this was her third time to take it. And, the student just looked, she was like, "Miss Tibbles, I'm going to fail. I'm not going to be able to graduate. So that's just the way it is. I failed this class 2 years in a row now." And my wife, in her genius, looks at the kid and says, "You know what? No, you're not. You're going to pass." And the student looked at her and she goes, "Why?" She goes, "Because I'm awesome." And that immediately took the burden off the student, and took away the past failures of the two previous years, and allowed that student the place. I said, "You know what? The burden is on my wife to teach her and for her to learn, not on the student to do it." And she's only able to do that because of personal relationships with the kids. And so when we continually increase the class sizes of our kids, those personal relationships disappear, as Conan was saying, as Misty was saying, and as Matt believes too. Yeah.
And I would just add too that you know, just looking at the numbers, and I know we've been all following them closely, but you know, in Hatling, for instance, there's, you know, upper 20s for sixth grade, and there's just some nuances here that I think many people may not quite grasp, because occasionally I'll get people say, "Well, when I went to school, I had 28, 29 students in my class." But there's a couple things that have changed. Culturally, things have changed dramatically. There's not as much influence in the lives of children outside of the classroom. So a lot of the life skills that are necessarily to learn, I know we can debate whether or not schools are responsible for that, but the bottom line is the teacher needs those life skills of discipline and listening before they can even get to the next level. The other side of this is most of our classrooms are not that big physically. They are not built for these sizes. So you walk into the classrooms at Hatling or you know, some of the other schools, North Point Higgins is a little bit better. But you walk through, and these are not huge rooms that they're packing lots of desks into. So,
thank you. And again, if you're just joining us, we're talking with four of the five school board candidates. We offer the opportunity for any listeners to call in if they have questions for the board themselves. Number is 225-9655. Have just a few more questions for you all. Appreciate you being here tonight. Maybe we'll start with Matt Tibbles on this one. This year, the state wasn't able to contribute funding to the obesity grant prevention program. However, the school board voted to use district funds to continue funding the wellness coordinator position. I'm wondering what health and wellness looks like in the school to you.
Health and wellness in the school district is it goes back to what I've been talking about with safety, kind of all night. And people probably get tired of me talking about that all the time, but the reality is for a kid to be healthy, you know, they need to feel safe, and they need to be able to relax and be able to engage and be present at that particular moment. So that's the first thing for me, as far as the healthy foods and all of that. You know, I think the more we teach our youth to live healthy lives, to be active. I know my oldest daughter was telling us about the game that she played in gym class yesterday, about how she was saluting and up and all around all the gym class. And you know, I was thankful for a gym teacher that would teach my daughter, who doesn't really need to be taught to run around or anything like that and be active, because that's who she is, but that's important in their lives, to remain active and to eat healthy. and to look at a balanced diet and not to not to overeat or anything like that. So there's a lot of aspects that fall into that, from safety to food to exercise. They all work together. They work hand in hand. It's just a matter of prevention.
Conan, on wellness in the schools.
Well, personally, I had a pretty big wake up call health wise back around Christmas, and since I've turned things around and improved my health greatly, but a lot of this was linked to, most of this was linked to eating habits, nutritional habits that I developed in the past. And so I think anything that we could do to help kids develop those nutritional habits. Now, they're supposed to get a lot of that home. They do get a lot of that at home. But I think that that should be continued at school to the greatest degree possible. Things like adding that that water bottle station and buying all the kids a bottle of water, coming from a guy that probably drinks too much Diet Pepsi every day. That'd be a great thing to just have around right in front of me. So my lamentation on it when it came up was that, like, you know, I think that, like, even though money's tight, it's money well spent. I believe it was like $56,000 or something like that that we scratched up for that. So yeah, money well spent, and I'll leave it at that.
Misty?
I agree with you, Conan. It is money very well spent. It's interesting to me, you know, if I were just to take a step back and look, I'd say, well, you know, why are they doing health and wellness in the school district? But I think there's definitely a place for it in our district. I've seen the survey results. Obesity is a problem in our town. And really, we're effectively trying to undo cultural norms that our kids have learned for years and years and years, you know, that we just, you know, go home, grab a bag of Cheetos and a soda and do it again an hour later if you're hungry. So we're trying to undo those behaviors at the school. I don't necessarily know that's a function that the school should take on, but I mean, personally, I'm good with it. I think we need it. I think our kids need to have those kinds of good examples set. It's definitely an investment that's well worth it.
Matt Eisenhower?
Well, I speak around the country and in our state and even locally on healthcare change. And obviously this is a hot topic, and what we call it is population health. And one of the things that we've learned largely from through a national conversation and through the Centers for Medicaid and Medicare and people who really follow these things is that this is not a single sector issue. And what I mean by that is when you're trying to reach the triple aim, which is the goal of our nation to increase the health of population through individual health while reducing costs, because we cannot, you know, the cost of healthcare is unsustainable at 19% of our GDP. And so if we're wanting to impact that, it has to start in some fundamental sectors like the school. But I'll say this, it cannot be only the school. There needs to be a unified effort in our community that does not heap one more thing on the shoulders of a teacher, one more thing on the shoulders of our superintendent and other district workers, because they're dealing with too much as it is. One of the things that I'd be a strong proponent for would be to increase our wellness tools that we give to our teachers to keep them healthy. And so I think, as Matt alluded to, if they are healthy and demonstrating some basic good eating habits, for instance, at lunch or at their desk, those things will be absorbed more than taught. And I think that's a start. But I recognize, too, this is not predominantly – this is not the primary aim of a school district, is to be the leader in health reform in our community. I think they need to be part of it. But I recognize I'm enough of a pragmatist that it can't be done only in the schools.
Conan, you wanted to add something.
And I just wanted to make the point that, like, you know, I think that's, like, why this is important, because there are kids in the community, and, like, you know, talking from personal experience, there are kids in the community that go home and dad's passed out on the couch, what's for dinner, go yep. microwave a couple of burritos.
Right.
And So I'm coming from that angle. If they're not going to get it anywhere else, at least they can get it from us.
All right. Shifting topics. Misty, sorry if we start with you on this one. Wondering if you support the Excellent Education Enhancement, or EEE, grant proposal that expands borough education funding to non-traditional students, including those attending private schools and homeschool.
You know, I'm not sure. I don't know enough about this grant proposal to really offer an informed decision, so I'm going to pass.
Matt Eisenhower?
Well, I'm opposed with a little bit that I know from Mr. Thompson and his draft proposal, because anything that decreases the obligation of the borough to pay for current needs is just a deal breaker for me. Now, in saying that, I would be open to creative ideas if the borough wanted to say above and beyond their expenditure of our obligation to our current students, to look at some creative ways to provide tax credits or these block grants. I would be open to listening to those, but I recognize there's a whole bailiwick of challenges as to how you would monitor this, how would you make sure that there's not abuse behind it. So this is a complicated issue, but in its current form, I would say no. But I would again reiterate that anything that helps the individual child learn, if there is a creative way to use vouchers to allow for students to go outside of what we're offering here in this district, I would be supportive of at least looking at that.
Matt Tibbles, want to answer?
Yes. I would say what I know about EEE is in its current, I would struggle to support that. My wife and I were talking about this earlier today, that for me it doesn't make a lot of sense to be able to pay the Craig School District to educate our kids in Ketchikan through the school that's in the mall. That doesn't make a lot of sense, that coming from the Ketchikan Gateway Borough, we're paying the Craig School District to educate our borough, our kids here. But much like Matt, you know, it's important to come together and dialogue about that and be creative and be innovative in solutions. If it's not this, then let's brainstorm something different for the sake of our kids, so that we all rally around it as a community, so that our kids, again, are the priority, and everybody gets to see their kids thrive.
Conan.
Okay, now, again, I'm not an expert on constitutional law or anything like that, but there are some concerns about the providing funding for homeschool, you know, for homeschool students in particular. You know, that there are some questions about whether that's actually, legal under the state constitution. The part that I have, one of my biggest issues with the EEE is that, you know, in the opening paragraph, the point is made that this is intended to provide stability and predictability to school funding. This is supposed to, like, you know, solve this, like, you know, runaround that we've had for, like, you know, the last several years. But at the same time, language later on in the document says that the borough, at its sole discretion at any time, could change that. And so I'm just, I just don't see how it's really going to change anything. I think it's just another incarnation of the status quo, personally.
All right. I wanted to end with somewhat of a current events question. Maybe, Conan, we'll start with you, since I'm asking hypothetically if you were on the board, and you are sitting on the board now. This week, the board was split on a decision to return the athletic director position to a certified administration position at an additional cost of $40,000. How would you have voted and why? And in case maybe you just like to talk about your decision.
First of all, I will tell the public how I voted. It was a tough decision. There were merits to both proposals. There were strong merits to just keeping it the way it is for right now. And then there are a lot of advantages to making it an admin position as well. When the vote finally ended up coming out, I passed the first time. I ultimately ended up voting yes, but you know, it was a tie, so the motion failed. Like I said, it was a very tough vote, and ultimately I decided to vote yes, because I think that we need to provide some sort of stability at that position for the kids.
Matt Tibbles?
I was there at the board meeting listening to the board go back and forth and listening to the conversation. And one thing I do believe is not micromanaging. You know, Superintendent Boyle knows what's happening in the school district. He knows that position. You know, he wanted to see that as an administrative position. I understand the conversation with the $40,000 and where that's going to come from, and given the price of oil now and not seeing it going to be rising anytime soon, and the coming storm, second wave of the storm that could be even far worse here in the near future. You know, those are hard decisions, but there is a point where, you know, we've hired the administrators, the principals, to do their jobs. They're there day in and day out with feet on the ground, interacting with the students, interacting with the teachers and the staff. And so I look at it from a perspective, I probably would have voted yes on it, just because of Superintendent Boyle knows what's needed there. And I trust that. So that's where I would go.
Well, Matt, you want to take over?
I don't want to take over, but I'll give you my thoughts on this one. I too was at the meeting and listened, and I thought there was some good conversation surrounding it, which I was encouraged by. So, you know, I think the thing that left me with a little bit of heartburn was that we have to have a certified administrator at the cost of an extra $40,000 to deal with something that I don't understand. You know, and basically it boils down to they need to be certified as an administrator so that they can discipline children. That to me, I think, is strange. I'd like to learn more about that and understand why that's a requirement, why there can't be a professional teacher that's trained and adequately there. But I understand there's regulations and policies. I get that. With that, I did understand, and I do trust, and I don't micromanage, and I would go with Mr. Boyle's recommendation. He thinks he needs it. He knows what's happening and understands the nuances, and I would support his decision. I would have voted yes.
Misty?
I would have voted yes as well. The current activities director, I know how much time and effort he puts in. I think the position is worthy of a certified title and the increase in salary. And I know there's always concern that activities are always below the red line year after year after year, but we always manage to get them up there. And even so, there's a lot of leeway within this position to add and change, modify duties so that the district would definitely benefit from such a change.
All right. Last, I just want to offer an opportunity for some closing remarks. If there's anything you feel like we didn't cover tonight, or a message you'd like to leave with voters as a takeaway message. Conan, you want to start? Started with you last time.
I can't think of anything else I'd like to add right now.
Sure, I'll go.
Misty?
Yeah, I am, you know, I'm willing to step up into this role to serve my community. I have no expectations for winning or losing. This is simply just my way of giving back to my community. I'm not going to be embarking on any heavy campaigning or sign waving. I'm pretty much just relying on my reputation, and I appreciate your support. If you have any questions for me, please contact me. Find me on Facebook. That's all.
Matt Eisenhower?
Yeah, I'd just like to add thank you to the candidates. I think, as Matt Tibbles and I talked about before, having good civil discourse is great, and to sit in a room with some intelligent people that can maybe have some varying views but can talk about it, I think, is incredibly strong. You know, I just want to end on the fact that there are some strong, wonderful things happening in our community. You know, hearing about ACT scores being more widely used is showing me that we are preparing students for professional track to get into colleges and universities. I'm just blown away by the work that Revilla continues to do to help students when they're in a place that maybe a traditional classroom isn't a right fit for them. You know, I look back at my life and I wish I had had that opportunity. I think the fact that our enrollment is up shows that we are in a healthy community from a business standpoint, which will help keep a healthy school district. And then I just want to end with the beautiful diversity in our town. You know, I love charter schools. I love the ability to innovate and do the things that we do. And here we live in a town with Revilla and Fast Track and online and traditional classrooms and charter schools. But like I said before, there's a storm a brewing as to how do we pay for this. And I think we'll have to have honest, frank conversations as a family in our community to keep our priorities straight. So in my book, priorities will always be people, and will always be the teacher in that classroom and preserving that to the best of our ability. But thanks again to the listeners, and I think we had one, maybe two potential phone calls, but appreciate it, and look forward to meeting those of you who I don't know. And I do have a Facebook page as well. You can just look up Matt Eisenhower for school board, and you'll find me, and feel free to give me a call. Thank you.
Matt Tibbles.
Yeah, I want to echo some of that too. Is we do have a great community, and no matter where I go, whether it's coaching Little League soccer or on the Empowering Youth Task Force or all the other groups that I get to be a part of, we hear wonderful stories of our kids achieving and thriving, and I love to hear those stories, and a lot of times those bring tears to my eyes because kids are overcoming huge obstacles and huge hurdles in their lives to be themselves and to thrive and achieve great things. You know, Vigor does some great things of coming in and inviting high school graduates to come be a part of them, and Vigor trains them. So we have a community that's willing to support and willing to train our kids that don't go off to college so that they are job ready and so that they are ready to enter the workforce. KYI, to mention that, with their job work program is another one. And so there's great things coming, but also I also want to say, I encourage our community, be active in your schools, volunteer. Last year, Point Higgins lost half their volunteers midway through the school because the mothers had to go back to work. And no school should have to lose their half of their volunteers halfway through school because of that. So get out, be active in the lives of our youth. Be one of those anchors that the youth can turn to and say, I need you to support me. Can you help me to grow and to be who I need to be? And so be out there, get active. Again, I'm like Misty and Matt, find me on Facebook. Come by IROC and get my phone number and let's talk. Let's go down to the Point or Refiner's Roast or McDonald's and have a drink, and let's just talk about what the future can be so that we can get there.
All right. Thanks again to all the candidates, Misty Archibald, Matt Tibbles, Matt Eisenhower, and Conan Steele for spending your Friday night here at the radio station. Wanted to mention again, sorry that Alma Barker wasn't able to make it tonight. If you missed any of the conversation, the full forum will be available online. And stay tuned to KRBD. We'll have music for the next half hour, and Snap Judgment starts at 9 o'clock.
Contagious. Wherever we go, we can spread wellness. It can be as simple as smiling and offering an encouraging word, as helpful as picking up the litter on the sidewalk, and as crucial as washing your hands to keep germs at bay. Learn more about spreading wellness in our community at peacehealth.org/healthy you.
lives again. What's wrong?